Eric, how good to see you. Let me make sure my volume. There, now I have volume. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Yeah, that's about all we can do these days.
It is. I got my pads for my swamp cooler, and thinking that I probably need to get those up pretty soon.
Getting to be that way, yeah. I'm going to just put my name in instead of my wife's here.
Merle Pokemper. Oh, you know what? I try to send people reminders, but I don't have your telephone number, Mark. What is your telephone number? Is it a text? Is it a cell phone?
We have one of each. I'll give you my cell.
Okay.
607.
Okay.
259-5570.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
I had lunch with Dante yesterday.
How's he doing?
Good. He's, I don't know if this is for public use, but he's going to retire March 1st.
Of next year?
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. What's he going to do for fun?
Well, he didn't say, but I'm hoping he gets back to writing a little bit.
He's such a good poet. He's so good.
Yeah.
So you had lunch with Dante.
We have lunch about every 3 weeks or so.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So he's still coming up to Albuquerque and working at Sandia and stuff then, huh?
Right.
And where do you guys have lunch?
Oh, different spot all the time. Yesterday was at a Vietnamese restaurant all the way out central that I'd never been to. Dante said he was there once, and it was really good. And we generally pick a different spot. He chooses one time, I choose the next time.
Well, that sounds fun. That way you get to try a lot of different restaurants.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you're going to be going to the picnic on Saturday?
Oh, yeah. Any opportunity to sell a book, I'll be there.
Right, absolutely. Well, we have Carol in shadow once again. Good to see you. Good to see you. We have no volume. You're still on mute. You're still muted. Oh, okay. 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 So did you go to the convention, Mark?
I didn't. It worked out. It was just the timing was terrible. So I did not go.
Oh, okay.
Did you go?
I did. Well, you know, it was remote, so.
Yeah, right. How was it?
It was good. It was good. Yeah. Good. And we had people from all over, lots of poets that I'd never, mm-hmm. you know, from outside of New Mexico.
Oh, good.
And it was a whole thing on mental poets that talked about mental illness. Mm-hmm. So, it was hard. It was hard.
Yeah. I bet.
Yeah. And Scott Wickerman did a couple of poems that were so, he's so talented anyway, but he did a couple of poems that were so sad, but they were really beautiful. And I was I was really amazed. I was really amazed because let's see, probably Anne Marie saying, hello, Anne Marie.
Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. So you're going up to Albuquerque tonight. Okay. Okay. Well, tell her congratulations for me. Yeah, see if you can get her talk her back into coming and doing some poetry with us, or at least performing for us. That would be fun. Okay. Okay. Talk to you later. Bye. So, Carol, I figured out how to do the security thing.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So people can just, like, I came on and Mark was already here, and you just push a
Good.
button. Just punch a button.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I need all the help I can get these days.
Well, it's easier, I think, than waiting for to let people in, and you're talking to others, and then names come up and so on. So
Yeah,
this way they just come in.
it's really a distraction. It's really a distraction. To have to be looking at doing two things at once. It's enough of a struggle to just do one thing at once at a time.
No more multitasking for me.
No more. No. Well, I can't.
I can't. I've proven it to myself. I can't do two things at once. I can do one thing well, and if I try to do two, they're not even halfway well. So, like, put on blinders and.
Like trying to get the chapstick out of my purse while I'm driving at the same time and
Oh
going into the wrong lane.
my
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got chapstick like in my car pocket, in the car side door.
Yeah,
A
that's what
comb
we
is in the
need.
door.
Yeah, We need it. We need it. We need it. Looks like it's 6 o'clock, right?
Just
Yep.
about.
6:01 I got.
Yeah, I'm showing it's time. It's time. Let's get started. Carol, can you give us an update on the convention and did we make money?
Not yet. The executive board is meeting on the 15th.
Oh, okay.
We'll have the numbers discussed then. Helen has sent me her numbers, but she just sent them today, and I was at the computer lab all day, so I didn't even look at them. It's really for her to present. I'll just tack them onto the meeting. It's up to
Okay,
her.
okay. You were at the computer lab all day.
I
Hi, Shirley.
volunteer.
Huh?
Hi, Cheryl. I volunteer at the computer lab here in town, and we've just reopened, so people are very spotty about coming, but I'm trying to be there as much as I can to help the newer volunteers. Thank God we have newer volunteers. I had
Really?
one called out, so I had to take her shift. Plus, I was orienting a new one, so I stayed for a little while.
Okay.
And then I put a sign on the door and said, "Gone fishing."
Computer help it is not available till fishing is over. Yeah. Okay. So, well, let's go ahead and get started then. Let's see who. Let's
Somebody
see.
else read. I'm starving. Excuse me. I didn't eat all day,
I
so.
know that.
Okay.
What?
Well,
Shirley? I can't hear you, Shirley.
okay.
You have to speak right into your microphone.
Well, I know, and I turned this up, or at least I thought I did. Can you hear me better now?
Okay, much better, much better. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm only about 6 inches from it. So anyway, Bernadette, I talked with her earlier today, and she's planning to be here.
Right.
So anyway, hi
Hi.
everybody.
Hi.
Hey, Shirley.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Look for me at the picnic on Saturday, and I will have a book put away for
Yay. Okay.
you. So are you
Great.
going on Saturday, Shirley?
I am. Bernadette and I are riding together. Do you need a ride? Are you going?
I was thinking about it. I would love to be able to go. Yeah, I would love to be able to go, but I don't want to drive all that way. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're meeting at my house at 8:30.
At 8:30. It doesn't start till 10:30.
No, but I think we'll be meeting at 8:30. We need to go by, there's Bernadette. She was going to call Zach and see if we could come by and pick up some things like the journals that were left over from from our convention in Santa Fe and the banner so that we can put out our big, you know.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're going to take care of some stuff then. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll stop on the way, but that would get us there. Plenty of time to get our places and get set up.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think if I go, I'll go by myself then. My energy is pretty low. I don't know that I could stay the whole day, but it sounds like it's going to be wonderful. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bernadette. So you are on mute. Is that okay?
There she goes.
There we go.
Okay. Excellent. 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 So Bernadette, do you want to give us any updates on the convention? I asked about that earlier and we don't really know, but.
Things went really well. Our numbers were pretty good. Profit-wise, we're looking at other aspects of gaining more income, but everything at the convention was really, it was a full day and it seemed like everybody had lots of fun.
It was really rich. It was very rich. Okay. Okay, good. Okay. So who would like to start reading then? Okay, Carol, you finished eating? So you're ready to read? Okay, great.
And my poem is called Starving.
Well, that's fitting. That's fitting.
I put the plate aside, though. These places made of hunger deep within, I'll touch them with my heart to open wide, that never shall you hunger there again. Starvation will not find there to reside. My hands are made of light, thus darkness fails. This whimper that discovers its own shout in fear of darkness never will prevail with truth of such divinity about. We shall not starve together, but shall serve, eliminate the vacuum in our souls, abhorred by nature's blessing, shall observe all flame coaxed from darkness in the coals. I cannot help but see you as the light. I dare not hold the darkness near so close. You bring me to the edges of my sight, places where the limits only pose. We far extend these, turning one to two and two to one. We join in sheerest grace. We knit our worlds in blessing, me and you. I touch you with my soul wearing your face.
Oh, that's lovely.
An oldie and goodie.
Yeah.
Okay. Who would like to go?
But somebody else has got to read.
Yeah.
I'll go.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay. This is from my second book back in 2016 called Intersections. And with Mother's Day approaching, this one is called Mom. Excuse me. Home 3 days, maybe four, doesn't matter. Sitting at the table, coffee cup in my right hand, newspaper spread before my eyes. I'm 6 inches off the chair, spilling coffee on pajama-clad thighs, startle response squared. Without a word, Mom sweeps the shards into a dustpan, depositing useless pottery into the garbage. Sorry, she whispers. I mumble something, but wanting to shout from the top of my lungs, the depths of my soul. Ask me why. Ask me what. Ask me. She does not want to know, perhaps wants to spare me the pain of telling. I know they care. Still no one asks. I love Mom. She went back to work. Most of her paycheck went for my college years. I did not know until after she passed. never thanked her, never said I'm sorry for screwing up, not graduating on time, letting my life spiral into war, leaving her with 12 months of anguish. I read The Worry two or three times a week, every week, and I would spin the dials with urgent anticipation for letters sent to box 12694, APO San Francisco 96307. Others, occasional words from college pals before they tailed off into the hurly-burly of their lives. Mom held her granddaughter before the rampaging cancer ended her journey 5 days after the kids' first birthday, robbing them of how many more celebrations. Loss filled me not with anger, but with rage. And despite knowing no answers possible, I asked why. Thank you.
Wow. Powerful.
Thank you.
My mom was 61 when she passed away.
Ooh, young.
Seems so young.
Yeah.
That was me coming back to Vietnam, sitting there when she dropped a dish on the floor and I went crazy.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
I just knew that you broke the cup. Yeah.
Okay. I could go.
Okay.
Except I want to, a couple things. I wanted to say about the convention, the National Poetry Convention. If there's anybody who would like to be a delegate and is willing to sit through 3 days of convention going, and you know, that's the society, I believe, will pay for your registration fee. So you can get 3 days of poetry and see what a national convention is like for nothing except time invested.
And it's in Florida?
It's in Columbus, Ohio. Bernadette and I are going to go in person.
What's the date, Shirley? Do you know?
Offhand? June the 23rd through, which is actually, that's early arrival. That is a Thursday. The convention really kicks off on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This year, the schedule is a little bit different. Usually what they do is to have, on Sunday night, they have their big wrap up with a gala dinner. But this year, they do that on Saturday night. And on Sunday night, they're going to wrap up with a the Blackberry Peach performers doing their stuff right there at the last. And with the announcement on that last night of the grand prize winners in the last, well, it's the top 3 to 5 contests, the top money ones. So, and I want to talk about something else too. And I hope Anne-Marie will join us a little bit later.
She's not going to come. She's going to be at a performance by her granddaughter.
Okay. But this is something you might be interested in. On Monday and Thursday of this next week, I am going to be doing poetry classes for all 3 of the 5th grade classes at Ann Parish Elementary. And anyway, I'm going in on, as I said, on Monday and Thursday from 9:30 until 12. And what we'll do is on Monday is I'll give the kids a writing assignment. And then when they come back on Thursday, maybe we'll have some poems and so forth to, you know, share or send on. I'm also going to let them know about what kinds of things are open to them in the New Mexico State Poetry Society and the Federation contests, because there are things that those kids can enter now because our society has sponsored those 2 contests. So it would be great if we could get some New Mexico winners. And that's kind of filtered through. Some of that can be kind of filtered through us and sent on to the Federation. You know, so we'll help out with that. Okay. But, okay. So, here's one. Okay, this is a wilderness poem. We were supposed to, sometime in the past, we were supposed to write these. This is a sonnet. Redwoods root themselves, it lies shallow, interwoven. They send titans toward the stars. High above this forest floor, trees lean toward each other's touch, like fingers steepled in prayer. We're told that minerals stain canyon walls their bright vermilion, but how can we deny all those sunsets and their brilliant paints? Oh, that rowdy, splashing mountain creek, the grimy garments of our souls beaten clean upon its rocks. Tableland spread in lavender and gold, a feast laid out for mind and soul.
Hmm, lovely. Thank you. Welcome. Bernadette?
Okay, I could go next. This is actually a poem I wrote this month for a contest. That's a video contest. So I might send you guys an email and show you the video that goes attached to this. So it's Pyra Ode 1.5. And here's my translation. What slender lad soaks in scent is clinging you now. Pyra, on a bed of peaceful bliss, sunken in your bewitching depth, for whom you whip up your golden locks. You're so stylish and straightforward. Many's the time he'll wail at your righteousness and the evolving gods, and be amazed at the ripples broken by darkened breath. But now, in all innocence, he takes pleasure. Your graceful irresistibility and desire, you always available, always lovable. Not knowing about dangerous, gentle winds, I envy less fortunate who have no wisdom of you and are blinded by your presence. As for me, the gravestone stained the slab, announced my devotion to he above emotions, surfing waves, parting the seas to the gods before me.
Wow.
Thank you.
Woo. Was there a theme to the contest or anything?
Yes, it had to be for the Pyra Ode 1.5. And so there's different translations. And so I created my own.
How do you spell that? Is it P-Y-R-R-H-I-C?
Yes.
H-A. H-A, Pyra, okay.
So, gang, wow. I have not been writing at all. So you're going to get a book report from me tonight.
Okay.
In phases. And the book that I read is The Book of Hope by Jane Goodall, a survival guide for trying times. And the first question is, what is hope? And she looks at defining hope as something that's often misunderstood. Sometimes people think it's passive wishful thinking, and it's the opposite that's the opposite of hope, which requires action and engagement. And many people understand the dire state of the planet, but do nothing about it because they feel helpless and hopeless. And so this book is about hope, is about taking action, and no matter how small you think it is. And so she has four sections in terms of what is hope, four things. And the first one is about what she calls amazing human intellect. And as you know, intellect can be very, very fallible. And she, the example that she gives of intellect is it can be good and it can be evil, and can be greed and hate and fear. and the desire for power, or it can be adaptive and good. And the example she uses of an example of good is something that happened after the Rwanda war. And evidently Rwanda and Burundi were both countries that were mired in civil war. But what happened in Rwanda is that President Bill Clinton made a visit to Rwanda. And because of that, Rwanda got international aid. And what happened after that, they got infrastructure and roads and hospitals and international businesses. And they were really able to, the Hutus and the Tutsis, I think it was, were able to forgive one another. There was a lot of reconciliation that was able to happen in Rwanda. So they are a real example of so a little bit like South Africa in terms of reconciliation. But Burundi didn't get any of that. And so they are still having a problem with violence. But that was her example of amazing human intellect as an as the first reason for hope.
That's nice. We never hear the ends of the stories. We hear about the violence, but we never hear what happened after. Or so it's nice to know that they reconciled. That's beautiful.
It is. It is beautiful. It looked like it was because of Bill Clinton's visit and the focus that he made on Rwanda and then the international aid that came to the country.
Can I tell you a brief story about hope?
Absolutely.
This was told to me by an Episcopalian priest about 20 years ago. He was born in the Netherlands, and he and his family moved to what is now Indonesia, which at the time was a Dutch colony, and was occupied by the Japanese in World War II. And he and his family, he was a young boy, he and his family were interned in a camp. And of course the conditions were, you know, pretty horrible and everything. And he said, we were there, oh, probably 1942, at some point into 1945. And he said, we heard rumors about the fact that the war was going okay for the Allies. The Japanese were, you know, being defeated here, there, and everywhere. But we didn't know anything specific until one day, a small plane flew over the camp, and the plane had British markings, and the pilot wagged his wings, which is a kind of an international symbol for everything's okay. Mm-hmm. And the plane flew away. And he said, from that day forward, until we were actually freed, we had hope.
Oh, that's beautiful. And she gives a couple of examples of people in concentration camps, and mm-hmm. and some had hope and made it out, and
right.
some did not. So yeah. And
Jane Goodall is totally amazing. It's my wife's niece. Heard Jane Goodall talk when the niece was like 7 years old, and decided that's what I want to do in life. And she went on, and she's got a doctorate in apiology, monkeyology or whatever, and has been in Africa, you know, taking care of orangutans and this, that, and the other thing. And now she's back in this country and works for Fish and Wildlife. But Jane Goodall was her inspiration.
Jane Goodall has been an icon for so many people around the world, and it's really fascinating reading her book and seeing what a great example she is. So okay, so thank you for that. Okay, so let's go on. Carol, you want to go round two?
Sure. How many dreams make a saint? Make me flexible again, Lord. Bring me to that place of comfort in this everlasting body. Let me be but another beginning. One more Easter, readmitting the light. I carry it upon me. A cape of strong silk snapped out to stop the wind and fly. There is a ray of light with my name on it somewhere here. I know it. Another elusive start, supported unreservedly by universe. I'm best at beginnings. The one keeping track, making notches on my stick, must be plumb wore out by now. Quel stupide, holding my horses while I'm in front of the parade.
Oh, how fun, Carol. Thank you. Thank you for that. How many dreams make a saint? What fun. Okay, Mark, you're on again.
This is from my latest book, yes. This poem is called The Poet Dante. The poet Dante and I share breakfast this day. We speak not of the inferno, for Dante is of New Mexico, not the Florentine of yesterday. We speak lovingly of wives and lovers, reverently of mothers and fathers, proudly of sons and daughters. We speak of the majesty of eagles, the delicacy of clouds, the desert desperate for an elusive rainstorm. This poet Dante is a man of science, a man of deep faith, age-old opponents in the search for answers. Though we speak not of the inferno, this poet Dante and I endured private hells. For him, a sudden string of swiftly striking tragedies. For me, a loss of another dimension, no less hurtful. Such tragedies might shake the faith of a lesser man, force a retreat from the world. This poet Dante held fast, his faith the enabler, empowering him to carry the weight of loss. My faith, not as strong, not as deep. Faith in who? Faith in what? A hand not leading, but guiding when I allow. And that, of course, is Dante Verdi.
Yes, yes. A hand not leading, guiding. Yes, I like that. I like your honesty. Thank you for your honesty. And
you.
And you just, I so appreciate Dante. I'd love for him to come back.
Oh, yeah. I said before, I had lunch with him. We have lunch about every 3 weeks. And he's going to retire next March, and I hope he gets back writing and everything.
Yes.
Ooh, that would be great.
Yes.
Great if you'd join us.
Yes.
A few more things about the Berry family. They started out as the Bacchus,
right.
But in the Second World War, a fellow that they later called was it Hollywood Berry? He got nicknamed Hollywood Berry. Anyway, he was fighting overseas, and he got in a very tough spot one time. And he promised, you know, God, if I get out of this, I'm going to go back and I'm going to put crosses on the top of Tome Hill. And so he made it through the war okay. And he came back and he kept that promise. And he, the whole Berry family is very devout. And so anyway, he climbed Tome Hill every day with cement and buckets of water to put those crosses up there. And it took him a long, long time. He got some help, I think, from his family, but he did a lot of it by himself. And his, I know there are three boys, and I know Dante, and I know Ricardo, and his wife, Sherry. They've been to our house times, and they are just an absolutely wonderful family. They, you know, family ties are strong, and they just they're strong in their faith and just wonderful people. And that's my story.
Well, the other great story about Dante's father, he was towards the end of the war, was in Naples, and he got to know this family. And they had a daughter who was like, I don't know, 15 or 16. And Dante's father told the family, I'm going back to the United States. But when your daughter is of age, I'm coming back. And he did. And the rest is history in the Berry Bacca family.
Nice.
Oh, so Shirley, do they own Tome Hill, or did they just decide to put it on the land without owning it? Or I don't understand. Do you know?
I don't know for sure. My guess is that they may have owned it. I mean, they probably had lived in that valley for however long, you
Okay.
know.
Okay.
I can't imagine him encroaching on something else, but with that, with the church that's there and living in that community themselves, he probably owned it. I don't know.
Okay. Well, it certainly is iconic, and every year they show pictures in the news bulletin of people going up the hill.
The Dante, I mean the Berry family itself makes that pilgrimage, and a lot of times they do it and they go to the different stations of the cross along there, and they will stop and they will sing and have prayers and stuff. The whole family is very musical, and so anyway, I've seen them in action, and that was really quite inspiring. So.
That's a wonderful story. Thank you for these stories. This is what great fun. Great fun. Yes. Okay. Shirley, have you got one to read?
Okay. This is
Did you?
something I wrote when there was all of the thing with the pipeline going into Dakota, and the Standing Rock, protests,
Right.
not protesters, protectors, the water
The water
protectors
protector.
there. And you had an oil line coming in, and this draws from Hopi and Lakota prophecy about something that was called the Black Snake, and I interpret that to be the oil pipeline. Okay.
Shirley, you need to, whenever you turn your voice, your face away, we cannot hear you.
I'm sorry. Okay, so I take this to be, you may just have to see me like this.
That's fine. That's fine. We can hear you then.
Okay. So anyway, Dakota Pipeline. The eighth sign in Hopi and Lakota prophecy is a great black snake, Zuzeka Sape, whose crossing of a river into sacred land must be stopped, or it will bring the ninth and final sign, a falling blue star signifying the end of this fourth world. The Snake River rises from a geothermal fountain beneath the surface of Yellowstone National Park and flows more than 1,000 miles, becoming, by the time it enters the Great Columbia River, its greatest tributary. The black snake can never slake greed's insatiable thirst. The tarry sands and shattered shale, cradling its fractured birth, oppose the starry, clean splash where the Snake River bursts from the warm womb of nourishing Mother Earth.
Oh,
great visual.
wow, thank you for that prophecy. That makes it very interesting. So
Yeah.
they predicted this, is what you're saying.
This is the prophecy that's there, is a great black snake will cross a river and bring, destruction, apparently.
Okay, thank you. Bernadette, you've got one?
Yes, this one's called Distant. Lifted in spirit, blown away, troubled. Footprints bedded in mud, exploring me to drift amongst exposed failures. Keep preaching. These are tainted words. Are services over? Jeans, a t-shirt, spoken hymn books, a hat, a pair of shoes. Time is clear. I am patient. Now I wait, staring into darkness, not knowing, never suspecting, assuming. Then I saw the faces, not party to. I am one of principle. It's like I'm losing myself. I was always free. Life is all about choices. We live to accept, not exactly normal, sentimental perhaps, cautious. I accept the consequences. Grace. No more talk. It's done. What's done? What does that mean? What does that mean for me? I'm searching one's soul. You'll know. What has meaning? Jeans, t-shirt, shoes, a hat. I am now fully dressed. Where will I go? That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A little bit of mystery there.
It is a mystery. Leaving us hanging.
In a distance.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the second reason for hope. The first was humans' amazing intellect. The second is the resilience of nature. And she gives a lot of examples with that. And the first one is, I don't know if some of you may have known that at 9/11, there was a tree that was found that was barely alive. And it was massively injured, and it was right at ground zero at 9/11. And this woman decided that she was going to try and save the tree. So it was moved, and it was touch and go for a while. And the tree ended up surviving. And they took the tree and planted this tree that had recovered from massive injuries and put it in the memorial in the museum of 9/11. And the tree is really thriving there now. So that was the first example of resilience in nature, literally being bombed and had buildings falling on it. And the second example that she mentions is a tree that they found at a tree that was found at Nagasaki and World War II, and it was bombed, and it has these huge black wounds on it. But it's this massive tree, and it is still alive, and it is growing, and the Japanese consider it a sacred tree because it survived the bombing of World War II. Yes. And then the third example that I thought was interesting was I think this is in Israel. They found these in a tomb. They found seeds from a 2,000-year-old date palm. And they planted the seeds, and they've now got this huge tree that's from a 2,000-year-old date palm, and it's producing dates. They call it the Methuselah tree. So talk about resilience in nature. And the other piece that's interesting, that another piece of what Jane Goodall does is, you know, she tries to do these wildlife refuge places for chimpanzees. And the major place is in Gombe, Tanzania. And what she was finding is that she was not able to save the chimpanzees in the area without paying attention to what was happening with the people there. So the people in the villages around where these chimp camps are had no health care. They had no electricity. They had no running water. And young girls were taken out of school early so that they could help around the home and so that they could marry as early as 13 years old. And so Jane saw that this was this, that they needed some help. And so what she did is she started something called Roots and Shoots, which is to help the people. And she began by helping the people in the community to grow food. And she's basically turned around the economy of a lot of the villages, because she started getting the kids involved in making changes. And she started like little micro businesses with the women in the villages, so that some of them have started getting chickens and growing and getting eggs and selling the eggs, and then able to give their girls some schooling. So the girls are having more schooling, you know. If girls have schooling, then that's a way of helping the community. So and keeping them from marrying so young. So that's, she uses resilience then as it's a really bootstrapping the communities around these forests where the chimpanzees are. So helping the people by helping the chimpanzees by helping the people. So that's another example of the resilience that she's been responsible for. This amazing program called Roots and Shoots. So that's the second one. And there's four of them. So who would like to go? Who would like to go next? Let's see. Be back to you, Carol.
We might as well continue around the geometry here. I don't know where the title for this one came from, but I love it. I love this title. No more, Mr. Nice Girl. I look as sappy in the photo as the cottonwood behind me. And when did I ever wear pink in real life? No more. I don't even know what I'm missing, except it's no longer there. A sea entered my inner chambers, hallowed as any woman's, wrought the change you see here, the rebirthing, resistance reinflating. What emerges? What is this new being? She who no longer needs pink. In the desert, sometimes butterflies turn into dragons.
No more Mr. Nice Girl. Here's to Dragon Carol. Here's to Dragon Carol.
Love that. And sometimes butterflies turn into dragons. That's good.
Okay. Mark, what have you got for us?
Got a short one on the lighthearted side. It's called Kitchen Music. Nice to see you where you belong in the kitchen, slicing away, she said, as he flicked away the tiny black seeds, then a squirt of lemon juice, a dusting of cinnamon and brown sugar before sauteing dusky brown basques, affirming her opinion, all the while listening to Schubert's Fifth Symphony. He finished that one.
Sounds like a great dessert too.
Yeah.
Okay, Shirley.
I wrote this last year for the Windows themed, one of the contests in the National Federation 50 was themed Windows, okay? This was called Outlook. By day, the Johnson house wore sunlight like a crown as it perched atop the tallest hill. At night, it glimmered under a moonlight spell and had an unmatched view down on the town. Maddie worked 6 days a week to make it shine. She swept and polished, washed the windows once a week on Saturdays, so she could catch the tram at 12:03 to save the long walk to her shanty near the mine. A bite to eat, then soapy pail and brush, Maddie on a stool to reach the top. Her kid said, "Mama, when you gonna stop? You're beat, and no one else will see that smudge." "Don't worry about what folks think. You know I won't stand for nothing cutting off my view. Got a right to see God's beauty, so do you. Now look out there, ain't that a glorious sky?"
Oh, wonderful.
We got to work on your accent, Shirley.
I know. I don't do dialects very well.
I want to invite her to do the windows at my house, Shirley. Miss Bernadette.
Okay, this one's called Dreadful Insomnia. Siesta on the terrace. Deep dreams. Gather inner courage. Prepared split-second decisions. Fire into the cauldron. Tested ambitious dose of events. Hardwired avoidance. 40 winks of sheep. A bit of shut-eye. These are intriguing ingredients. Failure could impact your cure. Slumber in the land of nod. Sedatives accompany a glass of water. Dare you try to bed? Fear overwhelming. Nightmares wake. Repeat after me. Power nap crawled into my dream. Power nap screamed me to sleep. Unwind, relax, sleep. I've tried every wild remedy. I walk the halls, a catnap cursed with haunting visions, nightmares full of hallucinations, ghostly apparitions. Horror mocks me. I'm considered a freak. Boiling pot thickens. Anxious, I call to thee. I wear a mask. Close my eyes. I hear a voice saying, "Wait." Repeat after me. Power nap crawled into my dream. Power nap screamed me to sleep. Unwind, relax, sleep. Thy hearing impaired, voices, angry voices, utterance. These voices block my judgment. The pills are gone, the water drank. Asleep, or am I? I run mad, demented, raging, appearing in your nightmares, taunting you while you sleep. Repeat after me. Power nap crawled into my dream. Power nap screamed me to sleep. Unwind, relax, sleep. Desire, wonder, vision, fantasy, aspire, hope, meditate, turn off the lights, silence. In the dark, close your eyes. Repeat after me. Unwind, relax, sleep. Dream. So I don't sleep very much.
I get that. Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear that, Bernadette. Yeah.
That's when I write.
Well, that's very productive.
Yep. Yeah. Does writing help you to sleep?
No, but at least I don't know. I tend to fall asleep and then I get ideas and then I have to get up and I have to write them down. And then I sleep for a little bit. Then I get more ideas. So it's hard sometimes.
So the writing is stimulating, but it's something you can do when you can't sleep.
Yep.
Okay. Got it. So, in the Book of Hope, the third reason for hope is the power of young people. And it's the sad reality, and I know this from another environmental course that I'm taking, is that since the early 1990s, we stopped being sustainable as a world, as in terms of what we're consuming. So we're consuming more now than what we can ever make up for in terms of energy and resources. And so basically, Jane Goodall says we've stolen our children's future from them. And the environmental destruction is ongoing. And she says that everybody has a role to play. And so she's engaged young people. Rather than feeling hopeless, she asks, what can the young people do? And what she started is an organization called Roots and Shoots. And she started it in Tanzania, where the Gombe chimpanzees are, and the villages around the Gombe where the chimps are. And what the kids in the schools are doing then is they take on three different projects: a project to help people, a project to help animals, and a project to help the environment. And then to implement that in the local community. And so they've got those started in kindergarten classes all the way through universities. And that's what the kids are doing. The kids are challenged with, what can you do to make the world a better place? And one of the things that the kids have done is they started cleaning up the beaches and cleaning up roads, and they planted trees. And some kids have raised chickens and started vegetable gardens. And they've even got one example of kids that were in a refugee camp, and they were refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And then when Congo was made safe again, they said, okay, you guys were in this refugee camp here, and we're going to send you back to the Congo now. But when they got back to the Congo, of course, there wasn't anything there for them either. They were in camps also. But here's the thing. The kids that were in Roots and Shoots, and the parents that were in Roots and Shoots, what they did is they took the chickens with them, and they took vegetables and seeds, and they started gardens there in the new refugee camps that they were in. So you've got chickens scratching, and you've got gardens growing there, and the kids are responsible for that. Pretty neat, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's example of her third power of hope. Okay, so maybe we've got time for another round here.
I've got one. I talk about my inner child in one of my poems. This one reared her head earlier. My inner teen knows nothing but what she wants. A little thief dishes guilt like hash, serves it hot and smelly, sends it down the line souring. The little righteous scold, who only knows rules and rulers really, whose heart compressed them into puckered arrows arcing the sky, putting all to distance. Her world's gone hormonal. Too much knowledge, not enough knowing.
The know-it-all teen, yes. Oh, yes. My God. Oh, yes. Yeah. Painful. What have you got, Mark? Anything?
Yeah. I wrote this after a trip to Cuba in 2015. Knights along the Malecone. Lovers amble along the Malecone, pausing to kiss, entwine on the pockmarked concrete of the seawall, dreaming perhaps of the unattainable beyond the vast gulf's empty waters. Fishing lines cast into darkness, their masters striving to lure a prize for the dinner table, for official limits to their sustenance are too soon reached. Cars of another time, some shiny enough for the showroom, others more junkyard worthy, purple and pink and blue, machines oblivious to once proud buildings, now stained by decay, crumbling onto cracked pavement. Public faces of beleaguered people belie hardship, no matter the cause, no matter whose finger is pointed at the current villain. And so I wonder what is uttered in their private thoughts, in the hidden chambers of their hearts, what is wished, what new revolution is plotted.
That's good. What was that from?
I'm sorry?
What was that from, or something you wrote some years ago, you said?
Yeah, after a trip to Cuba.
Yeah, wow.
Well, that raises lots of questions about Cuba. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, very briefly, we are emailing and corresponding with the gentleman who was our guide back then. And he's very, very, very intelligent, speaks great English, has a family, and things are not good. Let's put it that way.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're able to make contact with him.
So I guess I'm up.
Yeah.
So anyway, just a reminder, you probably already know that diamonds are really compressed coal, which is very similar to graphite. Everything there is some sort of carbon-based element. And also, you know, graphite, you find it basically in pencils, something every poet should know about. So this one is called Sonnet for Carbon-Based Life. And of course, you know that human beings are carbon-based life. Okay. In 2004, astronomers found a planet that circles a star like our sun, a sphere one-third graphite and even more diamond, but sterile and lifeless, a world without sound. This rock that we live on, hurtling through space, is teeming with life, though threatened with death. Poetry's task is to use word and breath to make truth be heard by a deaf human race. Graphite, which flows from pencils to pages, most stable of carbons, still subject to change with the right natural forces, can be rearranged, its crystals transformed into gems that last ages. May our graphite scrawls be imbued with the power to create the jewels that will ransom this hour.
Oh, nice. Would you read the last line again, please? That nice rhyme there in the last couplet.
Okay. May our graphite scrawls be imbued with the power to create the jewels that will ransom this hour.
Wow. Thank you.
Welcome. Very nice. So I guess I'm next. I'm going to read, the title's called Superhero. So it's not written about my mom, but it's written about a mom I know. Superhero. With her ability to influence possibilities beyond imaginable, stronger than any physical demands, faster than a speeding rebel, armed against rebellion, shielded with cloth of ancient curse, Wonder Woman wore it well. My mother wore her apron, strings ragged and worn, tied around her waist. Invisible was the noose around her throat. Slowly tightening, life circumstances caused concern. She hid it well. drinking dirty water from the well. Offspring kept her busy. Duties and chores took up most of her time. Once in a while, I caught a tear. She would quickly turn her head, walk away, disappear. She dodged bullets from a revolver, a game her male acquaintances insisted she play. These men were mean. These men were angry. With her strong demeanor, she belted out in front of them, shielded me from evil. She was my protector. With her eyes behind her head, a mind reader, filled our bodies, stuffed mouths, conjured magical rituals. Swollen tongue, voices in her dwelling. Villains drank their self dead. Stiffs, zombies, crawled to be fed. She can see through solid walls, pain and sorrow, searched for her soul. Her gentle hands caressed in mine, gives me hope throughout the night. Brute strength, has she drugged them out the door, tossed them out along with their whores. Making sure we were fed, clothed, and off to school we went. Of course, I saw the bruises, sometimes broken bones, always accidents, quickly answered or ignored. She told me stories, right from wrong, tucked me in, kissed my forehead, was my best friend. She locked my door, wrapped her arms around me, kept me safe. She was my hero, noble and good. She lives in myths and legends. She wholeheartedly vowed to take care of me with every power within. I idolized her courage, admired her, smiled and grinned. How she bed secret layers of dirt, turned into intervals, shoveled away. Sore on summery winds, gave me direction, took my hand in flight. My superhero, my mom. Together we fight.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm.
So, Bernadette, the fourth reason for hope that Jane Goodall gives is the indomitable human spirit. And that poem was really about an indomitable human spirit that you know. So firsthand example.
Thank you, Quan.
And the examples she uses are some heroes that we all know, like Nelson Mandela and Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Mother Teresa. And she also talks about Winston Churchill. When the rest of Europe had fallen to Hitler, Winston Churchill was still saying that Britain was not going to fall, and they were going to fight. And then she uses some personal examples, some stories that she knows of. And the one that I was most struck by is two men in a poor village in China, and one man was blind, and his other friend had lost his arms to a power line accident when he was a child. So one had no arms but could see, and the other one was blind. And they lived in a village that was surrounded by polluted land. And they said, well, what can we do? You know, we're poor, and what can we do? And they took cuttings from local trees, and they started planting trees in their area. And they ended up planting thousands of trees and creating an entire forest. And these are people that one was blind and the other one had no arms, but they created a forest that now surrounds their village. So I thought that was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And let's see. So I'm going to read, at least I'm going to read the poem that I wrote called A New Hope. I think I've already read it again. I've already read it for you before, but I thought it was appropriate for the book. A New Hope. The male god Zeus and the male myth makers have scapegoated the release of pestilence onto the females, Pandora and Hope. We have forgotten the fight between God and man and revenge by Zeus. Time to forgive Pandora and write about a new hope, partly truth and partly fiction, as all life and imagination is. Hope is more than collapsed residue stuck in the corner of Pandora's box. Hope is more than a friend to fragile dust bunnies, the remnant left when virulent pestilence, war, and famine was released upon the world from Pandora's box. Hope expands as our view expands. Let us reimagine and identify her possibilities. Hope is a strong-armed female able to give you a hand up of inspiration when you need it. She is part light and part darkness. She is both the flat surface in your dark walk and the light at the end of the tunnel. She has been part myth and part real. She is a promise, maybe even a false promise, that if we take our medicine, we will get better. She is a medicine woman of our own making. Only when we take the nurturing seriously will we strengthen her power enough to materialize her. She is a relaxing into surrender of what is and is not. She is with Don Quixote, swinging her sword at windmills, understanding madness and the need for company. Hope knows the loneliness of insanity and begs for understanding and forgiveness, for the angry, isolated, and hopeless. Hope knows the loneliness of the sane, who question our greed and grief-filled choices. Yet hope visits scientists in their dreams, sending success for the latest vaccine. She opens the hearts of racist Southerners so they can care about feeding starving Black children here and abroad. She is the email handle of a chronic illness sufferer who fights through pain and fatigue, always looking for a cure, always hoping to be seen, always hoping to be loved for her strengths, her beauty, and many contributions. She's the female wolf who births and cares for another litter of pups, despite dwindling food, space, and enemies who hate her kind. Hope feeds resilience, empowers ideals for fairness, justice, and equality. Hope drops courage into the hearts of those who seek her out, those who believe and want to believe in her. Hope is our mirror of our interior. In dark times, she can both reflect and hide in plain sight. She is a belief in change in the face of our own inaction. She is a belief for change in the face of our misguided action. She carries the truth of our lifeline. She is the beating heart, the breath, the hands, and the words of love in action, as alive and real as each of us.
Oh, that's lovely.
That is pretty. Yeah, that is
lovely. That's okay, gang. Is that it?
I think that's kind of about it for me. I want to ask you though, Kwan, would you be at all interested in going to Ann Parish with me? Would you like to go up there and face the fifth graders?
I've got conflicts on each of those days. I'm taking it's oh. next Monday. It's next Monday and next Thursday.
Yep.
Yeah, I have conflicts on each of those days.
Okay.
I'm teaching Tai Chi at the Boleyn Library on Thursdays now.
Oh, how cool.
It is cool. I'm really enjoying it. And I'm helping a friend with some health issues she's got on Monday. So I'm not available.
Okay.
Another time. Yeah. Another time. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that we might think about is if this goes well enough, I kind of mentioned this to Bernadette. Since we don't have in our society anymore, we haven't revised our poets in the classroom. I'm wondering if maybe we could do something like videotape one of these and put it on our YouTube channel or something like that. I know there'll be other things involved with getting, permission to put kids faces on YouTube. Sometimes they won't let it happen, but anyway, it may be something that we can build on in the future. One of the things I'm going to do, I think one of the big problems with our books in the classroom. And I don't know, did Mark, did you ever do that part? Did you ever do the books in the classroom?
I did, two sessions at Alvarado Elementary here in Albuquerque. And it was great. And then COVID hit. It's right before I did it. I got to go. It's dinner time going
on. Okay. Bye, Mark. We're on for June 1st, gang. We're on for June 1st, and I'm open for themes.
Okay, great.
Okay, and we'll see as many of you as we can at the Poets Picnic. Don't take me off the thing before I tell Bernadette. Bernadette, I'm going to call you in here just a minute because I've spoken to some of the people that we were talking about before. But Quan, let me know if you want to go with us that morning.
I don't think so. I don't think I could last. I don't have any energy now, Shirley. So I couldn't last the whole day like that. I just couldn't, and I couldn't leave that early. I'm just not up for it. I'd love to see it. It looks like it'll be really fun. I'd love to just be outside in nature and poetry. Oh, that sounds just wonderful. Just wonderful. Yeah. So what have we got for any topics for next month?
Okay, May, June. Well,
summer. Summer. Polka dot bikini.
Huh?
The yellow polka dot bikini.
The bikinis. Bikini. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't have no bikini poems, so I could create one.
You don't have what?
No bikini poems.
All right. I'm hearing the bashful bikini. I'm hearing the bashful bikini. That's what I'm hearing. So, okay. Yeah. I don't know that I'm ever going to get in one again, but yeah. Yeah. Okay. And swimming. That sounds wonderful.
Swimming. And there's Father's Day and lots of weddings.
Father's Day.
June is filled with all, and Flag Day.
So. Weddings and flags. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Bashful bikini, swimming, Father's Day, and weddings and flags. Okay. We got it.
Plenty of prompts.
Huh?
Plenty of prompts.
Yes. Yeah. So Bernadette, the challenge is, can you put a poem together with all of those in it?
Oh, that's there it. You. A bikini of a flag.
The bikini flag.
Modeled for dad, right?
Modeled for dad.
That's a good start.
Yeah, that is a good start.
Stars and stripes.
stars and stripes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There we go. It's half written already, gang. Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks
for hosting it. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.